everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Game Grooves Uncovered. It's been a little bit of a busy time. We've had some fantastic VGM-related events in the community. I know plenty of people, including myself, got to go to VGMCon, and our last episodes we've got to talk about some of those. But one of the most exciting things in video game music, of course, is new video game music. So I have with me today our special guest, Jeff Penny, who's going to be able to talk about composing as well as a great background in arranging. So thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really excited.
Yeah, it's been great. I know we've been talking a lot about getting you on, and especially we've been talking internally, even like we need to talk to more indie composers and arrangers who are kind of working that bridge. And, you know, your credits range from working on things like Just Cause 4 to obviously indie games like Trek to Yomi and The Game of Fortune, which we're going to dive into since that's the newest one. But, you know, I've known you from the arranging community, from winning the, you know, Gang Awards, for making a Banjo-Kazooie anime OP, and, you know, just a wide range of really cool tracks, seems like anime-inspired stuff. You know, how does that go for you doing all these different kind of mediums of music?
Yeah, I mean, well, arranging is where I first got into composing to begin with. Mm. I was originally going to school to be a music teacher.
Oh. And
So I took a couple of actually jazz arranging classes. So I was doing like big band arranging kind of stuff. And I realized that I just really enjoyed arranging. So I started doing it for the pep band at my school. I started kind of doing it for just friends. I made like a YouTube video of, it's actually a Felicia Day song from the Guild. Oh, and just kind of, I'm like, oh, I really love arranging. And I just kind of got into it from there. And then that slowly started to branch into composing. But that was like how I started.
That's pretty cool. Like how far back do you go for like arranging, or, you know, we interchange like arranger, remix, cover, all that. But, you know, how far do you go back with that?
You mean like time-wise?
Yeah, time-wise, or like when did you say you got started?
Well, I uploaded that first cover from the Guild in like 2012, I think.
Okay, wow.
And that was the first time I like ever released anything. It wasn't like properly recorded. It was just like a handheld recorder in an auditorium while we were on the stage. But it was like my first actual recording that I put out into the world. And I got extremely lucky that Felicia Day noticed it and Geek and Sundry noticed it. So it got like 10,000 views or something in the first day.
Wow.
And totally set terrible expectations for the entire rest of my releases after that.
I mean, I guess that's kind of the story with everybody. Like, even when you start, I guess if you start with, you know, you start high, it gets harder to, get used to it with the journey. But from there, did you gravitate on like YouTube, or was it more like just arranger circles in general? Or
yeah, I mean, it was really just, I was making a lot of mostly VGM covers after that. Mm. I think the next cover we did was like a Pokemon medley thing. And then I just kind of arranged anything I liked, because at that time, most of my life was playing video games. So I'd hear a song and be like, oh, I want to cover that. Mm. And I would just figure out how to make it happen. I cringe very much listening to those arrangements now, because I had no idea what production was or recording was or anything.
Sure.
But that was where I started.
I guess one question I want to ask, because obviously it may not be the most exciting to stay on, but over time, have you viewed like the importance of like good arranging versus good production differently, you know, from when you started then? I mean, obviously everyone starts not knowing how to mix, but like, How has that like valued what you work on?
I have found that production has started to inform the way I arrange a lot, for better or for worse. And just because, like, if I know something is going to be recorded live, for example, I am going to write it differently than if I am planning on doing it with like a VST or with a synthesizer or something. It just, those kind of decisions start to really inform the musical decisions I make.
Interesting.
And then also just creatively, like, I can't actually say what it was, but I was arranging something for real people to play recently.
Okay.
And I kept finding myself thinking like, oh, this would be really cool to have like a reverb swell here. And I'm like, right, I can't do that.
Yeah.
This is being performed live. And so I, like, for better or worse, I find that I really heavily rely on that production side of things to get cool sounds, which in sound design-y stuff is really awesome. But for when arranging for live musicians is a totally different skill that I guess don't hone as often, because that's not what I'm typically doing.
Mm-hmm. No, it's interesting you mentioned sound design too, because it's an area that I think I've noticed a lot of musicians either have a skill gap or suddenly have like this incredible wealth of knowledge with you know, playing with samples and, like you said, reverb swells, reversing ideas and time stretches. What's your experience in like sound design? How does that like help with making music?
It comes from a few different places because, I don't know, I am very varied in my interest. I just like doing lots of different things.
Sure.
So it's partly like when I was starting writing music, I was more into like EDM stuff than I am now. I still like it. I still like electronic stuff, but I was a lot more into it. So I would watch a lot of tutorials on YouTube of just cool sound design-y things to try and incorporate them. Then there's the part of it where I do like actual like sound, not musical sound design, but like sound design for video games,
okay,
where
yeah.
I'm just constantly exploring like different plugins or different cool effects you can make and thinking about how I can fit them into like a musical kind of setting. And then the last mm-hmm. part of it, I think, is that you had mentioned anime, which is a huge inspiration for me.
Yeah.
And a lot of my favorite anime soundtracks are pretty sound design heavy. Like even the ones that are like more even like orchestral or rock or something tend to use a lot of kind of more sound design-y elements. I started writing a concept album, isn't the best term, but an anime music inspired album, kind of inspired by like romance anime, for lack of a better term.
Sure.
And I noticed even in there where it's like simple, there's usually like a lot of piano or just like very like light, chill instrumentation. There's so much sound design. There's a lot of reversing I talk about. There's a lot of like kind of effects with reverb and delay. Or like a big one that's really inspiring this album is A Silent Voice. And that whole soundtrack, even though it's mostly just piano, is so cool because they did all this awesome stuff like recording the inside of the piano and adding a ton of noise and doing like just all of this like awesome stuff that goes like beyond what the actual instrument would sound like performed live, but still feels very organic and natural, which is what I tend to gravitate towards a lot.
That's really cool. And it's cool that you mentioned, you know, again, rock and metal. I've noticed modern musicians, especially like in the scene, they're using sound design and flipping samples and, you know, doing things that we saw in pop music a while ago. And what anime I've been able to dive into, I wouldn't say I'm the biggest anime watcher now, but I'd like to think on average is more than, I don't know, people who don't watch anime. Yeah, music is extremely varied and very interesting. And there's just like a very eclectic approach to sound. And obviously, like, I remember when the Banjo-Kazooie community albums dropped, you made like an anime opening of sorts. And I thought that was really, really interesting. And obviously, like, the anime OP feels like it's like an archetype. Is that something like you've thought about doing, like anime openings, or inspired, I guess, you know, the way you're working on this album?
Yeah, I mean, I love that stuff. And for that one specifically, the Banjo-Kazooie one, I had never done like any of that before. I had never written for guitar. I had done like a little bit of drum set, but not really that style and nothing too intense. I'd never like dealt with a live multi-track drum mix. Like,
oh yeah.
Like almost, I'd done a little bit of vocal mixing as well, but like almost everything on that was a skill I had never done before. But I'm like, I just want to figure out how to make this happen. Like I love this style of like energetic rock anime opening thing. I'm like, how do I do this?
Right.
And a lot of it was just like, I don't want to downplay myself because I don't want to like self-deprecate, but a lot of that just came from the amazing musicians and people on the track just asking them like, oh, what kind of thing would a guitar here do? What kind of thing would you expect like the drum to do? Like, how do I do this thing? And just kind of learning as I go. And then I learned so much doing that and have definitely incorporated that into my work after that. And it's a style that I don't usually get asked to do, which is why I do it on my like cover kind of stuff. I have another one that's kind of in that style coming out pretty soon. I'm excited for. But even in like my own composing work, I'll use a lot more guitar or a lot more drums or just things that I learned from that track that I'd never done before.
That's awesome.
Just kind of throw myself in the deep end.
Yeah, no, I think that track, you know, when I watched the video especially, it just reflected like, these are a lot of different musicians who are doing something that I've definitely never seen any of them individually do in this like style that's like tributing to, you know, anime opening themes. And I think it's really cool how you integrate you know, new skills into the music that you're not used to, let alone when we're going to talk about Game of Fortune, of course, there's a lot of rock, there's a lot of guitars and creative like usage of everything. And I think that's a really cool avenue we don't get to hear all the time. So actually, why don't we segue to that? How did you get into composing for Game of Fortune?
So that one was pretty straightforward, honestly. It was, there's a forum that's not super active anymore, but that we actually started working on this a few years ago. But the Lemmasoft forum was very popular for visual novels, especially made with RenPy.
Oh,
and
sure.
I just had a post there like, hey, I'm a musician, sound designer, if anyone wants to hire me, whatever. And he actually saw my post there and just emailed me and asked if he could hire me. So it's not some exciting story. It was just he saw my post and liked what I did.
No, I mean, it doesn't have to be as dramatic as we picture, but that's really cool. And like, you know, were you just looking for a way to contribute to anything, or did you have like hopes that a Viz novel would be like an interesting soundtrack to approach?
Yeah, well, I mean, I have worked on a bunch of visual novels at this point. Some of them never came out, unfortunately, but I just like the medium in general because in general, my gaming interests are more towards narrative-based things.
Sure.
Like action gameplay is cool, but I am there for the story and world and characters often. And so visual novels have always been something I've enjoyed. And then the other side of that is, again, my weebness coming through, is they tend to be a lot more influenced by anime and allow me to get a lot more musical influence from anime in my soundtracks than other games I've worked on where they tend to not have those same influences. So it's just kind of like a way to incorporate all the things I love into what I'm doing.
No, it's pretty cool because visual novels were something I didn't know about until, well, I say recently, and it's like 10 years now. But like even playing like Phoenix Wright, I noticed like this is a different style of game and it appeals to me because I like televisions, you know, movie, obviously, you know, anime as well. And how does it differ from like if you were composing for an action game that just happened to have like cutscenes as well and story as well? Like, do you feel like there's kind of a different thing that you would have done?
Well, I mean, I guess there's a few different ways I would approach that. But the big thing is just adaptivity. And I mean, I'm not going to go on for this too long because I literally gave a talk on this in like 2018, maybe. It's on YouTube. But visual novels in general don't have a lot of adaptivity in their soundtracks for whatever reason. I'm a big proponent that they should. But in any case, the fact that they don't means I tend to approach writing the music differently because I'm not as concerned about how they're going to be implemented in game. But what I am a lot more concerned about is that they tend to just be used more. Like if a visual, like I don't have a solid hour count on the Game of Fortune, but in general, visual novels have a lot of hours of content and it's just not feasible to write that much music. So you tend to hear music more often in a visual novel than I do think you hear it in other types of games. So I'm a lot more conscious of how loopable things are and how fatiguing they are to hear for an extended period of time. And then the other part of it is in a game, there's more often like visuals to match to. There's stuff in the picture to hit. There's cues or moments that I want to like score to. But with a visual novel, like there's words, there's images and that can be inspired. I'm definitely inspired by the art from the games, but it's not the same way of actually trying to hit these moments to picture the way it is. So it's just kind of like a different skill set, even though musically it ends up just being music at the end of the day.
Yeah, no, I like that. And one aspect that you mentioned, and again, like a lot of our audience aren't actively composing, they're, you know, arranging, you know, and I do appreciate that you mentioned, you know, music's music because it's true, you can prove it. But yeah, visual novels are huge. So, you know, when I looked at your soundtrack, I'm like, this is like an album. Like I could listen to this comfortably, which makes me wonder, like, is that a consideration you had when composing? You're like, someone can't hate this, you know? Like, if this is going to be looping while someone's reading or maybe even, like, voice acting scenes or something.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And I think the other part of that is that's part of what made it transition well into a soundtrack is because also in like an action video game, I am more worried about the sound effects and the voiceover and making sure that I'm not competing with all this stuff. But in a visual novel, like a lot of visual novels do have voiceover, but this one just doesn't happen to. So I don't have that competition. Like the music is 90% of what you're hearing at any given time. So it really has to just be something that you want to listen to. Whereas what makes a really good piece of music in like a different genre of video game might not be the same thing that would sound good to listen to on an album. But in this case, visual novels translate a lot better than other genres of games do.
No, that's also really cool to think about. And you wouldn't normally think or appreciate that. But yeah, with a lot of sound effects, I imagine that's how it would go. So, and this is especially because I've not composed for like more formalized games before, but how was like the approach for getting track lists together? Because, you know, when you read about the game, it sounds like this high intensity, like, you know, fans of like 999 or Danganronpa maybe even would go for something with this kind of engagement. So like, how is that laid out for you? Like which songs you'd have to compose or... you know, what kind of sequences would need scoring?
Yeah, so it varies game to game. Mm. I have worked on some where it's just totally up to me, some where it's like a communal decision, whatever. In this case, Kenneth was very kind of particular about what he wanted. Mm-hmm. He's the head developer who wrote the script and did all the programming and everything. Mm-hmm. And he just kind of knew what he wanted. He would be writing the script and being like, okay, imagine hearing some epic music here or whatever. And he honestly just laid everything out for me. I didn't have to think about that much at all. Wow. I still wrote to the scenes and made sure it fit with what he was going for, but I didn't have to like kind of decide how much music was needed or when music was needed because that was kind of part of his creative vision. So that part of it was pretty straightforward.
Now, that sounds like the workflow is much easier. And you said that you were able to score to it. So was the game like in development or like were you given kind of... some of the cutscenes maybe to score to?
So for this one in particular, later on in the development process, there's a demo that I could play and see, kind of get the vibe of things. Mm-hmm. But even early on, he would be very good about being descriptive and what he wants the player to feel, which at the end of the day is the most important thing, is mm-hmm. making sure that the music is making the player feel the thing they're supposed to feel. But even in some cases where I wasn't quite sure, he would send me like little snippets of like, here's this scene. And then I would read the scene and feel what it feels like. I remember a few times I would like write something and then just have it looping in the background while I read that scene and be like, okay, this feels right. Mm-hmm. Or I need to adjust something here and just tweak that way. But for the most part, he was also like just very good about kind of telling me what emotional descriptors he wanted, and then I could just go from there.
For a game like this, I feel like a lot of it might have been like dark or like fearful kind of emotions. How did you like translate that to instrumentation and, you know, melody choice? Do you kind of just vibe for a bit and you like go from there with one instrument and you know, like what kind of composition process do you take with instruction like that?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had like some kind of easy answer that I could just be like, this instrument equals this, or this tempo equals this, or whatever. And a lot of it is just like trying things, seeing what feels right, just going by a little bit of gut. But also, the other thing that Kenneth did that was really super helpful is he would say like, okay, I need like a puzzle, like a track to play while they're solving this puzzle or whatever. And then he would give me like a bunch of different inspiration ones. So he would give me like three tracks and be like something like this, and I would listen to them and I'd be like, okay, I really like the drums in this, or I really like the bass in this or whatever. And I would just take the ideas from each of those that I liked and work them into my own voice.
Okay.
So like the ones that were, I mean, he gave me a lot of inspirations, but the ones that most commonly came up were like Ace Attorney, Zero Escape, Umineko, Bravely Default.
Okay.
And I would take those and I would be like, okay, how can I take the pieces of those that are getting the emotion that I'm going for and then like work them into my own voice, especially because a lot of those soundtracks, I love them, but they have more of like a, I don't want to say dated feel, but they have like a very specific aesthetic for them that isn't my compositional aesthetic. So it's like, how do I take those musical ideas and translate them into the way I write?
No, that's really well put. And I think I'm familiar with almost all of those. Umineko, I don't know if I've played or seen actually. But the music from like even Danganronpa, it's like very specific in one style, and obviously Bravely Default has this like, I guess, modern JRPG, broadly speaking, like soundscape that I don't think your composition like reflects that. It's far more unique, of course, to some of the other works you've done. And one thing I have to ask, of course, is there is obviously at least one like motif that I've noticed in Glimmer of Hope and, you know, Fortune Favors, like in quite a lot of things, the da 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 da. Like that's been really cool to see. Did you kind of plan to keep a theme present as you composed for like certain themes, or?
Yeah. So that one was a little bit of a roundabout because, like I said, these pieces of music tend to be used very often throughout the length of the game because it's just a long game. So I couldn't just necessarily write like this character's theme or this location's theme because then I would just need a lot more music. So I had to keep like the thematic things still relevant, but also not as specifically tied to the action just so they can be used in different places. So what I tended to do is I thought of the music kind of in groupings. So there's like the action music and then there's like the puzzle music and then like the more chill, like in between things music. And I kind of thought of them as suites. So each one will kind of have a little bit of a theme and then I can, I'll write one of those pieces and then I will use that same theme in other pieces rather than writing like the theme first and then putting it in. It's just kind of like derivative off of the first thing I wrote, with the exception of the main theme, which I purposely used in different ways to kind of be the overall shape of the game that you can hear in the first scene or in the credits music.
Yeah, it has like this kind of sweeping, dramatic, like, you know, encompassing feeling to it. I really like, and at the same time, it doesn't feel like, you know, you've heard it anywhere else or anything. Like, I like that there's an identity to the soundtrack as a whole, at least, you know, when I listen to it. And that's been really cool to, like, experience, even though you have, you know, vastly different tracks that kind of, I imagine for a game this length, keep things interesting.
Yeah, I was really worried about that because just stylistically, some of the tracks are very different than each other. So I wanted to really make sure that there was some kind of grounding that made it sound like one soundtrack rather than just like a bunch of songs put together.
Do you think like production is part of that or more so like the set of instruments and, you know, the style glues it better?
Yes, it's kind of all those things. one thing I found really helped though is initially I even wrote some of the songs with different instrumentation, but then I would take like a piece of music that I wrote for one of the scenes and then I would make a template out of it and then move that template to the new piece of music. And then so like, even if I initially had two different keyboard sounds, I would just move it to be the same like keyboard sound to just kind of create some kind of more cohesion. And just having, like, it's not just the instrumentation, it's like the way they produce, like having the same specific saturation on the keyboard or like whatever it is, just to kind of create some sort of continuity, even if the stylistic things are different.
Sure. No, I mean, with like traditional recording artists in one studio, some people, you know, tend to view that studio as having like some sound, and the consistency you have across like plugins or instruments, you know, may be kind of in that same vein, I suppose. But it's still really interesting to just kind of listen. And you mentioned a lot of like game references rather, that you were kind of directed as, you know, something like this. Do you heavily listen to anything like for ideas from those, or do you kind of tend to avoid it, you know, so that you can focus on, you know, your individuality and style?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely listen to them a lot, but I try not to get too into the headspace of like, I just want to rewrite that because that's not end goal here. So I was listen to something and then just kind of figure out what specific elements, like I'll take one thing from each track and be like, okay, what is the one thing that I really like that this is doing well that I can incorporate into mine? And that way I could still kind of incorporate those ideas without having to literally just copy whatever they are doing. I also do that a lot with, I mean, like everything I say comes back to anime, but on my own personal references in here as well, especially on some of like the more battle kind of music, I took a lot of inspiration from like Promised Neverland or Attack on Titan. Yeah. Hiroyuki Sawano was like one of my favorite composers ever. So everything I do is influenced by him. And I can definitely hear, I'm like, okay, I took like this kind of meter idea or this kind of like string ostinato idea and then just kind of like borrowed it. But it never sounds like any of those exact original pieces. It's just like those little bits and pieces that I kind of shape into my own voice. No,
a lot of people, you know, wonder about sharing, you know, influences and how overt you can be. But Well, as someone who's, I guess, seen some of these or played some of these games, you know, I like that you've established some sort of balance between influences and, of course, you know, just doing what feels right to you. And this isn't the first time you've composed, like, a soundtrack for a game, right?
No, I've written... It's weird. I've written a lot of music for games, but this is the first full individual released soundtrack that is just me. Like, I've written, like there will be some games where I've written, like, a couple of the tracks on the soundtrack, but then other composers will have written the other tracks, or I've written other ones that just the soundtrack never came out, even though the game did for various reasons. Right. This is like the first one where the entire soundtrack was just me and came
yeah,
out.
Yeah, I wanted to, like, make sure we kind of validate the, you know, event of it all, because I know in a lot of discussion leading up to the release of this, I've been really excited to see your process, because I know this was, like, kind of, you know, significant in that regard. And one area that I know you were speaking to a lot of friends about, including myself, is, you know, soundtrack. Like, it's obviously part of the game, but in today's, like, world, game soundtracks need to be, you know, marketed, and they stand on their own. People purchase them, they listen to them, they make vinyls of them. How was navigating all of that, you know, PR and things of... you know, to get the soundtrack known.
I struggle with that marketing side of things so much. It's difficult. Partly because I have very much found that people don't kind of share this information. Yeah. Like record labels or even composers who have been successful in marketing their own things don't really share that much. So that's one of the things I'm actually trying to do.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to get my numbers together because the game hasn't been out that long yet, but I am going to make a video just kind of like talking a little bit about the results I saw and hopefully make that a little bit more demystified for anyone in the future releasing
That's
a soundtrack.
Awesome.
But in general, it's just hard because it's just hard to get people to do things in general. Like and I don't blame people at all. I'm very much the same way. Like, we're so saturated with stuff all the time that it's so hard to get people to, like, click on your link versus the, like, 50 billion others they're being bombarded with.
Yeah.
But it's a weird thing because video game soundtracks are, like, in this niche where they are intrinsically tied to something that they're being released with, the game, but they also can stand alone. And I remember when I was still in school, one of the required things was to take some marketing and business classes. And they were very much focused on, like, pop or rock bands and, like, go tour and do all this stuff. But it's like, that doesn't really translate into the video game soundtrack world. It's like, obviously, if a game sells really well, that is going to help sell the soundtrack. But beyond that, there's not as many, like, tried and true methods, quote unquote, that will just kind of sell it. So you have to kind of creatively come up with ways to get people interested in the music.
Right.
That's kind of partly why I'm actually been streaming my music composition process lately, because it gives more people, like, an emotional connection to the product itself beyond what it is for.
Yeah.
In this case, it's just an album. But even if it's for a game, like, seeing someone actually actively make something is a good way to kind of cultivate just kind of a sense of caring about whatever it is.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And, you know, you made a lot of really good points. One of them, of course, is, you know, watching a stream is, to me, like, the equivalent of people who are hyped up for, like, a movie, and then they get to see, like, a teaser trailer, or maybe they see, like, the costumes, you know, and it just builds, like, an interest. And, you know, obviously, like, a lot of composers in the indie space are trying to, you know, separate the music soundtrack and make it stand on its own and market it on its own and, you know, make ends meet on their own without having to rely on the game, which can be really hard. I know, and I'm sure both of us know, like, a lot of people are trying to do this. And as you mentioned, like, without a proper resource people can, like, confidently use, it seems like there may be a lot of steps missing. You know, with a soundtrack, like, if you were to release a game soundtrack besides making the thing, you know, in general, what are some of the things that you've kind of, like, learned about, you know, doing in terms of, like, PR or registration or...
Well, okay, so the registration part of it is the whole other thing.
Sure.
But in terms of the PR part of it, it's just, like, one thing I recently learned, because I just got, like, the first, like... Everything's a little bit delayed, but, like, roughly the first month of sales or whatever. And I saw that, like, Bandcamp sales versus like Apple Music sales versus like streams or whatever, that like by far, like not even close, the highest source of sales and revenue was through Steam.
Wow.
And that so many more people bought the music on Steam than literally anywhere else. So that is, I don't have the numbers in front of me, so I'll put that in that video eventually. But that was something I definitely noticed. So next release, I will probably focus more on pushing people towards the soundtrack on Steam and trying to encourage that bundle buying sale. I also noticed that people who played the demo were more likely to buy the bundle because they were already familiar with the music and knew they liked it versus people who had never played the demo and would just start the game and then have to go back and buy the soundtrack after because they didn't buy it without knowing what it was initially. So that's maybe another part of it is like letting people hear the music and be aware of it more so before the game comes out. So they're more likely to buy that bundle rather than having to pay a little bit more and have to buy it after the fact.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Something to learn for next time.
No, that's really interesting. Yeah.
And then it's hard. And then you mentioned the kind of like administrative side of it, which is the whole other mess of things of like all the different agencies you have to register with and make sure you're getting all the royalties in the right place and then the distribution and copyright and make sure that you're never accidentally like automatically flagging people for playing the game. It's just, I don't know, a lot of stress to work out.
Yeah, that's hard and people don't talk about it.
Yeah, and that's also partly why I wanted to do it because I was like tempted to kind of go through certain avenues of releasing the soundtrack through a label or something, but I'm like, no, I want to understand this process first. So if I do work with a label in the future, I know what they are doing and not just like blindly being like, yeah, this seems like a good value without actually knowing what they are providing
the release. I think it's just an informed like decision regardless. And, you know, should you go indie like you know, this way where you own everything, you have your bases covered, and it's definitely interesting to see like certain like indie composers, going about this now. But especially since this is your first one that you made 100% and you're in charge of 100%, I suppose it like kind of pushed some of that, towards you, not just the interest, but like the necessity to keep tabs on your music and where it's going and how it's, handled.
Yeah, definitely. Also, that creates this, not just necessity, but it allows for a little bit more like risk taking, I guess, because just doing it by myself, I did not expect to get nearly as many sales as I did, which is amazing. So thank you to everyone who has bought it. But, I was more willing to take risks and try things and see what worked and what didn't than if I was maybe with a label that has more of like, this is the way we do things, here's the plan, you just do whatever.
Like a fixed PR, fixed, management and so on. But nonetheless, it's still like really interesting to hear about it because, as you pointed out, and with a lot of things in VGM, I found there's just not a lot of resources made, sometimes because people don't have time or they don't prioritize. And sometimes because we're not confident, to share that information, of course. I followed quite a lot with, reaching out to like peers and learning how best to do this. And it does seem like there's not always clear answers on what's best or, where to prioritize marketing. One thing that I noticed, and of course, we can talk about together, is I noticed a lot of companies, and I've participated in this, reach out, and composers reach out to fan communities who are interested in, reinterpreting music. And, I've done it with Bandai Namco. Square Enix did it recently with Octopath Traveler 2. Witcher has done it, I believe, with Jillaversa. And I actually suggested that idea to yourself not too long ago. And that was a really cool experience. What is it like having someone cover your work? And I'm trying to phrase this in not like some sort of weird cocky way, but just, purely like, what is that like to have someone cover something that you've arranged?
And don't worry, I'm going to ask you questions about that process later. So you don't have to feel like you're just talking about yourself. But, first of all, coming from that background of arranging video game music, I've always like dreamed of hearing someone arrange something I wrote. So that was just amazing to begin with. So that was totally awesome.
What's that experience like, hearing something, that you've arranged and, of course, you know, just for the information of the audience, I kind of reached out to you with this suggestion because I'd noticed a lot of people doing it. And I, of course, wanted to cover more, you know, people from our community's compositions. I think that's a really cool way to, you know, use what audience I might have. And, you know, of course, learn more about different music. So you suggested to me Glimmer of Hope / you know, Weight of Life. And, you know, why specifically did those resonate to suggest to me? Because I liked them, but...
Yeah. So there's a few points I want to address from that. The first being, I think the initial question, that when I arrange things, I very much like to take whatever the original idea was, like the structural musical content. I keep plugging myself, but I actually have a whole talk on that on my YouTube channel as well about my philosophy about that. But I feel like there is like a musical soul to everything that is like its musical identity. And I like to take that musical identity and put it into my own voice in some way. So like put it in like a totally different setting, like Banjo-Kazooie into an anime opening kind of thing. And so I really wanted to encourage, when you reach out, I really wanted to encourage you to kind of take that, to take your voice and not feel like you're just trying to replay what I already wrote, but actually take that musical soul and like do something totally different with it. Because I think that's one of like the coolest parts of musical development is like fusing your inspirations into something new and making something new out of it. Because at the end of the day, there's nothing wrong with covering a song and just like playing it back exactly as it was, but it's not what I'm personally interested in. So I was very kind of, I don't know the word, but I was kind of, not insistent, but like I wanted to emphasize that I wanted you to like keep this in your own voice. And I picked it just because I mean, no other reason except that it was honestly just my favorite track on the album. And it's also, I thought, would work very well in your style. Because like some of the tracks, I think, would have been a harder sell in your style, even if I like them as music on their own.
No, that's interesting. And I definitely felt like comfortable once you said it especially. So I asked for convenience, of course. I was like, hey, could I like, you know, whatever song you choose, maybe I can play with the stems first and kind of mock something up, just because I've never done this with like direct contact to a composer either. The last time I was, you know, asked to cover something with like a game coming out, it was a little impersonal, which, you know, is fine. It's a good relationship to have, I guess, in that regard. But, you know, with you, I mocked things up, but I kept a lot of the synthesizers and strings, and it, what I did was like, I thought of a song that sounded like it was, you know, the same instrumentation and melodies. And it's called Sacrificed Son by Dream Theater. And if you look it up and you hear it and then you go, oh, okay, I see where he's like coming from with the melody stuff, then you might hear it in the metal version that I ended up producing. But yeah, one of the things you mentioned is like, again, your style, and my style tends to be not... I tend to like dumb things down, for lack of a better term. I want it to sound like a band with like two or three guitar players at most, one keyboard player, and then drums and bass. Like that should be it. So with a symphonic element, I can't like rely too heavily on like strings and brass and like reverse sounds and stuff that are being played all the time. But I really liked that. Just simple arpeggiation going on. It's something that I've noticed in like modern progressive rock and metal music where they get really like spacey and artsy with, you know, arpeggios and reverbs. And then I wanted to, you know, emphasize just a lead voice. So I took from more like guitar player music, you know, like Steve Vai, Joe Satriani, all of these players who are kind of like the band is just backing for them. And I thought, you know, and agreed that like the whole motive and Glimmer of Hope, Way to Life has that while moving, you know, with chord progression, it builds up, you know, drastically towards the end. And that's when, you know, the heavy 8-string guitars come in with that low E. And it was really interesting. But, you know, again, I never want to like ruin someone's song, which... you know, we say maybe that can't happen, but I definitely could picture it happening. So,
Yeah. You have so many points there that I want to address. But first of all, don't say that you're dumbing it down. It's not dumbing it down. Sure. It's just a different...
Numerically,
I know what you meant, but it's a different way of...
a more positive way to phrase that. You're right.
Mm-hmm. Numerically simplifying. Okay, we'll go with that one. But yeah, I think one of the things too that made me pick this track is that, for you specifically, is that, again, I am very, very influenced by Sawano Hiroyuki. And his music is just... Even when it's just like huge, epic orchestral stuff, there's always this kind of like groove to it. Like if you listen to like the Attack on Titan soundtrack that I mentioned earlier, or like Promare was another big one, or Kill la Kill, or really anything he's ever done, there's always a groove to it. And so even if there's like this big orchestra playing with synthesizers and all this crazy texture going on, that texture is not the identity of the piece. So even if you strip that away, you still have the core melody, you still have that core groove to it. And that I think is what I think translated really well into your cover, is that kind of groove that we so often hear in those metal styles still translates, and that fundamental part of it is still there. And then, so for the last part of that, I guess, when you are arranging, or I mean, you could speak in generally or in this case specifically, how much are you thinking about trying to preserve the composer's intent? Because I guess it must be different if you're actually talking to the composer. Like, are you trying to figure out what was going on in my head and then reverse engineer that? Or are you trying to put that out of your head and just do something new?
We need two-way interviews, more uncovered. I was thinking about feelings. Just like, you know, when I've written songs that are built around feelings. But my hope was that I would understand, loosely speaking, like what the game is about on like just emotional level. You know, I'm not gonna know if someone betrayed like someone over this reason or like very specific things. So by having like this little arpeggiation at the beginning and just like this breathing kind of atmosphere, I pictured what guitar and like rock elements make me feel that way. Which tend to be like heavy delay, reverb, a lack of too many elements at once. I'm also like not a big arranger, like for my style, of like multiple things going on at once. And like counterpoint isn't something that I tend to utilize too heavily. So yeah, like I'm just like, all right, why did Jeff choose to like go this way? And the song to me is like... like I visualize like the dynamics as like a growth, right? So if I've listened to songs like the song Loon by Periphery, it's like a ballad, but it gets heavy at the very end. So the drums are just doing this like ghost notey simple pattern, you know. And that to me feels like I'm in some unfamiliar place and my heart is like kind of just beating slow. And that's kind of more what I focus on in general. I don't think very like surgically about how to transcribe everything. And sometimes like, and I've seen this discourse of course, and you might have as well. Like when someone covers a Pokemon game and they have those, like those impossible things going on all the time, I don't want to play that. Mm-hmm. That's never going to, I'm never going to play that on guitar live. So in my brain, it doesn't feel exciting to like pull every little kind of thing that the composer has done, you know?
Yeah, it's about getting that intent and the just general feeling more than anything. That definitely makes sense. Does it feel different in this case because you were communicating with me? Like, would you not have put the same thought into it if you if it was like commissioned but you didn't have the connection, or if you were just doing it totally just because you wanted to?
Honestly,
would it feel
that's a really good question, because I do think I, on like some level, conscious level even, I did want to approach this differently than like when I did the Bandai Namco Tales of commissioned kind of cover. I was basically like taking a song that, you know, you mentioned quite a few anime derived things. I was doing like a Bravely Default style, but where the orchestra sits back and the rock is more up front, you know, to put it kind of roughly. So with you, I knew that obviously like soaring melodies and kind of like having this playful lead guitar is something that you do here in not only, you know, your soundtrack, but in anime music and score. So I did want to like kind of confirm that way. And I was a little bit more careful, especially until you told me like, make it more your own. So I got rid of a lot of like the extra elements only because of our communications. But yeah, in general, like if I am not communicating with the composer or I'm like not worried about what they're going to, you know, if they're going to see it, then yeah, sometimes I may not like fret too much about stuff. Another example is you may have seen the soundtrack for Chia, and our wonderful VGM community friend and brilliant composer, John Robert Matz, of course. We met for lunch randomly right when Chia came out, and I was like, oh man, I love this music. And I got the, you should cover it. And I was like, okay, when the weather's better and I can get my ukulele out, like, let's do it. So again, I was like, all right, I know he's going to see this. So, you know, I'm more careful. And as we talked about production, I'll take like less risky routes. You know, I'll put less instruments in so that I know I can mix it better. And, you know, for the Glimmer of Hope metal version, you're hearing like two rhythm guitars playing chords left and right, two clean guitars left and right. That's, you know, very standard stuff for like a simple rock band. And yeah, drums, bass, one lead guitar and one harmony. Like that's, it's quite reduced so that I feel more in control and that, you know, what I'm doing may not be as experimental as maybe you're hoping even, but it feels like the end product is going to be easier to like mold.
Yeah. I mean, that definitely makes sense. And also to go back, everyone support John Robert Matz, go listen to that original soundtrack and also Rose Cover, because they're both are awesome. And, but yeah, that definitely makes sense. I think I am a bit of an outlier in that my philosophy is kind of just like, I always want to do something I've never done before and just do something kind of crazy. So I might I might be a bad influence in that regard, but I understand what you mean.
I think the same way, and then the business end of, you know, when it becomes like a working relationship or a collaboration, I feel like I'm forced to behave a little more. But I mean, if you've seen any of my videos, I like going absurdly like whatever and just dealing with the consequences later. And I think that's what a lot of standout arrangers and standout composers, you know, embrace, you know, trying something new. And I love that your versatility has led to like, you know, Studio Ghibli covers on one side and then soundtracks to Viz novels like this with like this electronic dark rock kind of hybrid sound. And it just makes me feel like you're going to cement like your sound and people will enjoy that. For what makes it unique.
Yeah, and it's funny. I used to really stress about that. I would like be like, because everyone would be like, you need to know what your artistic voice is and you need to have like your defined sound as a musician. And I always really stressed because I'm like, I do all these different things. I'm constantly trying new things. What is my voice? Am I just like a mess? And then I realized that my musical voice is not defined by the style the way it is for some people. Like if some people might be like, their voice is being an orchestral composer, which is totally cool. But my voice is not as tied to a specific style or instrumentation, but it's just certain ways of approaching music. So like, for example, I was listening to Opeth yesterday, Ghost of Perdition. It was like one of my favorite songs in high school. And the way the vocals like hit you so hard when it comes in, I'm like, that is like that feeling is like something that I think has really defined the way I approach music. And so no matter what style it is, even if I'm not writing music that sounds anything like Opeth, I am still kind of influenced by those feelings. And so that is what my voice has kind of been defined by, is just sort of musical ideas rather than any specific style or genre or instrumentation. And once I realized that, it helped me a lot because I used to really stress, especially with client work, where I would be very much in my own head. I'm like, I don't want to take a risk. I want to do exactly what the client wants or whatever. But when I was in my own head, I just wouldn't come up with anything good. Like I would come up with things, but they would always just be generic and never make the client happy, even though that's what I was trying to do with being generic. And then when I kind of have stopped doing that, I just get much better results. Like, yes, sometimes I go like hard in a direction. The client's like, absolutely not. That's terrible. Don't do that. Go somewhere else. And that happens. But more often than not, just like not putting those blocks on myself and letting me just kind of go where it feels natural has been a much kind of like better that. Result musically for me.
It's cool that there's also like some sort of personal growth that you can attain from working on something like this and taking the time to like have a retrospective about, you know, the mentality you had. And, you know, risk taking and stuff is really scary when it comes to composition gigs, as a lot of people experience, you know, challenges getting started because, you know, there are a lot of musicians and there's only so few developers. So getting, you know, your first full solo composing gig, I imagine was like, you know, very precious and, you know, worth appreciating that way. But I still think that, you know, it sounds quite, I don't want to say experimental, but, you know, I don't feel like you held back anything. certainly not when listening.
Yeah. No, I definitely didn't by the end of it. I'll just like sometimes get too in my own head about holding back stuff while I'm writing it. And then by the time it gets released, I've given
sure.
up on that.
Well, just kind of you know, to. to close, of course, the Game of Fortune, like soundtrack, obviously it's a great listen, but it sounds like it was also a good experience for composing. What would you advise for, you know, avid composers or people who are still composing? Like what's something that you learned that you think everyone could take away from?
I mean, really, I guess it's kind of what I was explaining. Just kind of lean into whatever it is that feels right to you. Don't feel like you have to write a certain way. Especially, this is, I don't want to get too tangential because you're trying to wrap up. But I think this is why there's like a weird thing of people hating music theory, because they feel like once they learn music theory, they have to write a certain way. And that mindset is something that I have worked really hard to get rid of. Mm-hmm. And that it's, there's never write something because you feel like that is how it's supposed to be written or the way it should be written. Always write something because it is what feels like you want it to be. And that has just been super helpful for me in general, is just making sure that everything I write is kind of true to what sounds good and not something I'm writing because I think it's what is optimal in the situation,
that's,
if that makes sense.
Really nice. And I think, again, just even talking to you about, you know, covering your music, I'm like, kind of learning a little bit about myself and that process with, you know, wanting to be more different and just do what sounds right and not worry too much about what, you know, what will make Jeff happy when I send you the cover.
Yeah, especially in video game composing, that's such an important skill because, like, if you're applying for jobs, like you said, there's only so many game developers out there. If they're hearing, like, 100 tracks that all sound like orchestral music they've heard before, and then they hear one thing that really stands out, yeah, maybe it's going to stand out and they're not going to like it, but there's also a much better chance that it's going to stand out and they will like it, and the thing that's going to set you apart. So just, that's just my thing.
So obviously, this soundtrack's fantastic, and I think, obviously, you need, hopefully, a good break from this, but what's coming up next?
Right now, I'm working on a few games that I can never talk about until after they're released, of course. But cover-wise, I have an anime cover coming out in hopefully July that I'm really, really excited about. And the other thing is, I guess I've been writing this romance anime-inspired album on stream. So if you're ever around and want to come hang out and watch me on stream, write anime music.
Yeah, I watched a little bit of the VOD. And it's really cool to see, you know, a lot of composer friends starting to stream and share their process. But it's cool because, you know, I follow along and I learned some new tricks. And obviously sound design was kind of in the parts I was seeing with, you know, playing around with some, you know, cool techniques like that. So, and of course, where can people find you and where can people get the Game of Fortune soundtrack and the game?
Yeah. So the easy way is just to go to my website, jeffpenny.com, because that links to everything and all those different places. But I use Twitter a lot, it's Jeff Penny Music, or Instagram, Jeff Penny Audio. What is the Bandcamp URL? Is it jeffpenny.bandcamp.com? I think that's how it's formatted. You could get the game soundtrack for Game of Fortune soundtrack, or it's also on Steam if you want to check out the game, which I highly recommend because Kenneth did an amazing job. But also, make sure you check out the soundtrack on Bandcamp or on YouTube if you just want to listen to it, so
you
can hear
Rose's
awesome cover as well.
Again, it's been awesome having you. It's awesome having, you know, someone who's kind of hybridized composing and arranging and many, many more skills. So I appreciate you coming on. Awesome.
Yeah, I'm really happy you had
me. Thanks, everybody,
for
listening to Game Grooves Uncovered. Check out the game, check out the soundtrack and Jeff Penny's work, of course. And we'll see you next time.